gentlemen, welcome to Minute 133 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today on this lovely Wednesday in 2022 is Jeanette Ward of the Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Welcome back, Jeanette.
Oh, I'm happy to be here on this pleasant Wednesday of 2022.
Hopefully you don't have too much snow outside in Upper Wisconsin.
Listen, it's cold, it's snowy, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
There you go. That's great. Minute 133 begins with Danny beginning to row and goes all the way till we see Henley standing up. As we were discussing yesterday, at the very end of yesterday's minute, we had Danny and Willie get into a rowboat and start rowing or just pushing off. And today we get to see them actually do their job. So Jeanette has so much she wants to say about the
I have so many thoughts
rowing.
About this.
Yes.
Again, the first thing I want to mention is the score. The score switches to the most beautiful, like, evening, well, and early morning on a river. Pleasant rowing music where it's just like, yay, we're just out for a stroll is the wrong word, a row. We're out for a row. We're out for a paddle. It's such a pleasant score, and it shifts as soon as they push off and start heading down. Again, I'm mystified by the fact that Willie and Danny seem to be on such so in sync that they don't have any discussions about who's rowing and who's steering. They simply hop in the boat and they're good to go with no questions. Danny takes over rowing, Willie takes over steering, and I feel like we missed a scene, or they cut out a scene of some sort of argument about, like, well, I don't want to row.
They did rock paper scissors
to decide who was rowing and who was steering, because surely one of them was like, listen, we just crawled out of a tunnel. I had a panic attack in there because of my crippling claustrophobia. I don't want to have to row this boat. But then also, perhaps his standpoint is, you know, after having a crippling panic attack because of my claustrophobia, I would really like to row to work out some of this, to get my muscles going, to feel alive out here on this gorgeous river setting. So
maybe we find out, maybe we don't know that one of them is actually afraid of being in the water.
That could be, too.
We miss that part, too, that they're arguing over, you know, let's go in the boat. No, I don't want to go in the boat. No, let's go in the boat. I don't like the water. So then, then we get Danny saying to Willie, okay, you sit, I'll row. So, okay, yeah. That's fine. See, there you go. We could add in little aspects of the, you know, cut scenes as to how this inevitable scene happened. See, there you go.
Well, and Willie has the rudder, and I feel like my experience with rowboats has been limited to Girl Scout camp, and it was unsuccessful at best. Better in a kayak, where I have all the control. But the rudder, the grabbing and steering, do you really need that on a rowboat this small?
No,
wouldn't
you
be fine with just, you know, just one person rowing, and then, well, a little bit stronger in one arm is going to turn us that way, a little bit stronger in the other arm will turn this way. You don't really need a whole rudder and a guy manning the rudder. It's not a pirate ship.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been in a rowboat where there's a rudder. I've always been in a rowboat where you just have to row.
Yes.
That was one of the points I wanted to make here about the fact that why is there a rudder in this rowboat?
It's the point of a rowboat is that you can steer it with the
oars
or paddles.
Oars.
Oars in a rowboat.
Rowboat, yeah. If the canoe is paddles, here's oars.
Canoes have paddles, rowboat has oars.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't figure that out. That just makes no sense whatsoever.
It doesn't seem necessary. It really doesn't. But hey, it gives Willie something to do. At least he's not freeloading off Danny's strength.
Those boats in German occupied areas, they all have these extraneous things that you don't need.
That's right. My goodness.
Well, yeah, listen, it would have been better if they had a motor.
No, that would have been too loud. As we've established, they are making zero noise because they're having no conversations.
That's so true. They're listening they're listening to the calming music around them.
Yes, the beautiful score that just encourages them to get in and quiet. And he's not like rowing with, oh my God, we really have to get moving. It's like, oh, we're just out for a nice casual row.
A romantic, they're on a romantic
a little
early morning row.
Hey, whatever works, it certainly seems effective. So
apparently.
And again, beautiful shot, lovely camera work, the little village and church on the hill behind them that's reflected perfectly in the water below. It's stunning.
Yeah. Then we're done with Danny and Willie for this minute, and then we get to see Hiltz again. You know, he's actually now riding a motorcycle up from the ravine.
Yes. He rides it out of the ravine.
Exactly. Now, as I mentioned the other day, in the original script, there are two soldiers that are in this motorcycle because it's one with a sidecar. And they say that he made a makeshift uniform of the two uniforms that looks close to what it should. You know, that he was, you know, that it then makes the point that the fact, you know, he didn't find a soldier who's the exact perfect size for him. You know, he's able to mix and match.
I do appreciate that the soldier that he snagged is his size and he can simply throw on the uniform. That's great. The other bit of this that I love, and I love him riding the motorcycle up out of the ditch. I feel like on the day they were like, well, the driver will skid and then you'll just grab him, drag him off, put on his clothes, and then you'll pick up the motorcycle and ride down the road. And McQueen, I feel like, was probably like, guys, no. Have him crash off the road and then I'll ride the motorcycle up this hill so I get a little like lift right off the edge, and then I'll pause and I'll look at the camera and I'll fix my collar and then I'll take off down the road. Because
yeah, exactly.
The moment of him adjusting the collar so you can see he just put the uniform on, where he's like, well, let me get this so it's laying flat and it looks right and straighten out the helmet. And the dramatic moment of just like, whoop, this little tiny jump up the ramp of the ditch, and he just lands on the road and looks like a movie star. Steve McQueen, gonna find a moment to look like a movie star.
And that's the way he did it, you know. There, I've heard rumors, and I don't know if this is true or not, that he is actually also, that McQueen did the stunt. This, I know there is a point where he does some of the...
He's both of the people.
Where he's both people.
I know that... I think that's during the big jump later, where he's both him and the guy chasing him.
Yes, I know that there is that also, but I vaguely remember hearing that also here.
Yes.
Who knows? Doesn't matter.
The payoff is great because the sequence is very...
No, because then we would know for sure that the uniform would fit.
The clothes fit. Yes, I love that.
Yeah, and I love the fact that, you know, whenever you see German soldiers, Nazis in movies, they're always, the uniforms are done spick and span.
Fastidious uniform.
And he's wearing it in the typical, you know, Steve McQueen cool way. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not buttoning the top button. He's not, you know... Which might run into a little bit of problems with this a little later on.
They would notice right away if he encounters other Nazis and they're like, oh, his top button's not buttoned. Clearly an American masquerading.
Exactly. Clearly. Clearly. Completely. You know, like and you see that he still has his clothes on underneath.
Yes.
So maybe he's a lot, thankfully he's a lot smaller than the German guard so that he can fit those clothes on top of his own clothes.
Yes.
You know, and then he looks around to try and figure out, and then he goes off in the direction that the actual
guy came from.
Came from, exactly.
Yeah.
You don't see him do anything to try to deal with the piano wire.
No, we'll assume that he rides over it, around it. He's definitely riding through it because he's riding the direction the guy came from. So
exactly.
I think they did it.
I think they did it this way just to get because they get a great establishing shot from above,
Dunning
him
countryside.
Ride away, you know,
yeah.
Back in the direction that, you know, that the soldier originally came from. And you see the lake in the background, and you see the trees and the buildings, and it's just it's just beautiful to look at.
The unidentified quadrupeds in the field.
Yes, of course.
Sheep, cows, sheep.
Don't know.
Might be pigs. Who knows?
Wait, which field are you talking? You're talking about still on the right hand side there, right?
Yeah, can't you? We can no longer see unidentified quadrupeds?
Yeah.
Oh, no, because it would have been further off to the right behind
him as
he rides
up out of
the ditch.
We don't see them, actually. In this scene,
right.
We don't get to see them. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, Jeanette. No, no unidentified
quadrupeds
here.
All right.
Then we move along and we get to see the train again. We're back to the train. Now, I we discussed this the other day. I like the fact how in the original script they establish how close everyone is to one another, you know, during these escaping, these different aspects of the escape.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never
Each
really
of
think
the
about that. You think they're
the
all
same
going
general
out in different...
Area. Right. Yeah. Basically, it's almost, as it is, a handful of different set pieces where everyone has their own situation and moments and things to solve. An establishing shot to show you that, look, they're all in the same geographic area would have helped to kind of connect it. But again, it's not necessary. It just would have been interesting.
Yeah, it's not necessary, but it would make it be more intriguing to see how close each of them are. You know, that they're not that far away from each other. I mean, the real escape took place when there was snow on the ground. So, you know, I always find it, you know, difficult. How do you hide your tracks when you're trying to escape
take
in the snow?
Take a snow branch.
And you don't want people just to find you.
And then you sweep it over the top of the snow as you're walking. Why don't you notice? I thought that was common knowledge. You know, sweep, sweep, sweep behind you.
Well, yes, of course. But it depends on how deep the snow is and, you know, and how much you're actually paying attention to what's going on and instead of just trying to get to
freedom. I suppose that's true.
Could be either of those. So we see the train come by, and this is the first time we actually get to see how many cars are in the train. Oh. Did you notice? Did you
I'm
count?
Counting them. Nope, I did not. Five, six.
Okay, so there are six plus the engine and the caboose, so there's a total of eight.
So it's a mid-size train.
Yeah, mid-size train. I guess that's what they could afford, you know. That's what the production could afford to rent for the day. You know, just to get this shot of the train going by. And then we get to see inside the train, and we get to see some of the escapees. And we get to see Henley and Blythe just sitting there, Blythe staring out into the abyss in front of him, doing such a great job of showing how blind he is. We also get Ashley Pitt, you know, leaning against the side of the mm-hmm. window. And then Henley decides to light up.
Yep, sure.
I guess. You know, back then you were allowed to smoke on a train.
Right in the middle of everybody.
Unless they actually just took they went into the smoking section. This is the smoking
car. Could be, yes. Yes, that makes sense. Although no one else is smoking.
Okay, but so, wait, those two women behind him don't look like they're about to
They might be. They do look like smokers.
Exactly. And then we see the conductor enter the car, you know, walk through. Henley then realizes that, wait a second, you know... maybe I should have paid?
I feel like he's about to stand up to do some reconnaissance, although we don't know. We see him stand up.
Right, so he lights a cigarette, looks around to see who is actually coming in, notices it's the conductor. I like the fact that he is in no rush. He takes his time, puts his lighter back in his pocket. You know, the whole time we see Ashley Pitt looking out the window.
Watching the lovely countryside as it runs by.
Saying, oh, look, there's Danny and Willie getting into a rowboat.
Oh. And there's Hilts on a motorcycle.
And wait a second.
Dressed like a Nazi.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, and there's Sedgwick on a bike with a magically attached suitcase.
Exactly. Right. How does that thing stay on there? It's like, I'm going to have to try and catch up with him and get some tips on keeping your suitcase.
Magical balancing luggage.
Henley then looks around. Then we see that... What's interesting is what is he trying to what is he figuring out? Okay, they're on the train. That means they've paid for mm-hmm. tickets, haven't
yes.
they?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, do people pay for the tickets as they come through, or do they pay for tickets before?
When I have ridden trains in Europe, you can do either. I remember years ago you could buy the ticket once you got on. Although now they have little automated machines. Well, the last time I was there, which was a few years ago. You buy and this was in Germany, actually. You buy your little ticket from the machine outside, and then you get on the train, and then you have your ticket. I was on with my friend who we were riding from, oh, Lord, I'm not going to remember the cities. We were heading to Zurich through Germany. There were a group of teenagers also.
I was going
to
say, Zurich is not in Germany.
No, we were heading through Germany from southern Germany up through, and their group of teenagers were also on. During one of the stops, there was a conductor who went through and was asking for tickets, and so we showed our tickets. And then as he left us and headed towards a group of teenagers, the teenagers all got up and got off the train. So clearly, didn't have a ticket.
How did they get off the train? They jumped?
It was stopped. It was at it was one of the stops. So the conductor was, because it just stops at various locations, and you buy a ticket.
You'd think that the conductor should be walking through the train when people can't just get off.
Listen, I don't know the ins and outs of trains or what conductors are being expected to do. All I can tell you is that we were stopped at a stop. The guy was coming through, and this group of teenagers exited it swiftly.
Okay. Well, at least they didn't jump off it.
That would have been far more exciting.
Apparently. It would have been interesting to see that actually happened. You're right. Right, but, I mean, Henley is looking... So if they've already paid for their tickets... Actually, maybe they haven't. No, they actually have to because if you have so many people getting on the train, it would be very conspicuous if none of them paid.
So the question is, what is Henley's concern? Because he looks concerned, right?
Exactly.
He's lit his cigarette, puts the lighter away, and he looks concerned. He has watched the conductor go through, and now he stands up. We don't know what he's about to do. Could be doing anything. But he looks concerned.
Right. And again, the question is, what is he concerned about?
Concerned?
If he didn't pay, if he didn't pay, then he would be concerned that there's a problem.
Does he have a gut feeling about it? Is he nervous? Is he curious as to where the conductor is going? Or is he about to head up to the drink car and get some beverages for him and Blythe? Blythe can't get his own drinks.
That's true. And I love the way that he just taps Blythe. As, you know, it goes back to what we were saying about Danny and Willie. You know, that they have these unspoken conversations between them about what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. And he just taps him, and Blythe at this point knows, okay, you know, it could be that Henley's saying, all right, I'm out of here. You're on your own.
Bye.
I've had enough of dealing with you. you've been cramping my escape style. Exactly. Yeah, come on. It is, you know, James Garner.
The stylish James Garner. He is, I will say that, in watching this movie, he and Donald Pleasance were my favorite part. The relationship established. James Garner, my favorite character, but the relationship between him and Donald Pleasance was certainly one of my favorite pieces.
Okay, great. Well, we'll talk about that more later in this week when we get to your other, you know, once we're finished with these minutes, you know, we'll talk about, you know, the different things in the movie that you want to discuss beyond these 5 minutes. So do you have anything else for this movie?
Nope. I think that's good. I enjoy the other train passengers and how the universal look of person on train, of like, sitting on a train.
Right. I mean, we'll get a little more of them later in the week with some of the reactions. Some of these extras on the train have some very interesting reactions that we'll discuss. So you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
Feel free to check out my movie reviews over at my blog, which you can find at jwardadventures.blogspot.com. Just general movie reviews. If you want to find out what my belly dance troupe is up to, you can find us at tamarindtribalbellydance.com. And you can follow me on the Twitters at Jeanette_Y_Ward.
All right, excellent. And you go to our Facebook group and follow us in the cooler. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. And our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!